Hello.
Hey, Barbara Jane, how you doing?
Oh, hi, Jackie. How are you?
I'm all right. I was just wondering, do you know whether or not Sister Hamilton was disassociated or was she disfellowshipped?
No, I believe she was disfellowshipped.
You're listening to The Critical Thought, where we challenge our listeners to use critical thinking when examining the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Hi, I'm Lady C. Really, is there a difference in whether or not a person is disfellowshipped or disassociated? Well, JT is going to answer that question for us in the upcoming video.
That's a good question. What is the difference between being disfellowshipped versus a person being disassociated? The difference is, in the most simplest form, is one is active and one is passive. So now let's take a look at disfellowshipping. And what I mean by that is disfellowshipping is active, and I mean very active. You see, in order for a person to be disfellowshipped, this is what typically will happen. And there are various variations, but this is what basically happens. A person is reported to the elders that they have committed a sin. What the elders can do at this point is they can form what's called an exploratory committee, which is two brothers will get together and they will go and try and meet with the person to further investigate what's going on. After they meet, they will then go back to the body of elders, and then they will recommend we need to put together a judicial committee or not. So now we still see things moving. After this, three elders will be selected. The body of elders will discuss, well, who's best qualified, who knows this person the most, and so forth and so on. And it gets real tricky here because sometimes you can end up with elders who are friends on the body. Sometimes elders who don't like people are on that body of elders. So how your case turns out, it can vary from congregation to congregation entirely based on the three guys who are selected to be on your case. So once again, we see action going on. Now, what happens if they can't meet with the person? Well, the society is giving elders instructions, call the person up, leave a message on the phone. In fact, you can even send a certified letter. Now keep in mind, with all this going on, there's nothing but documentation, just documentation being structured. And so this is what is known as being active. So now we have got three elders who've been selected by the body of elders to be part of what's known as the judicial committee. They will set a time and a place. Typically, it's going to be at the Kingdom Hall. So once again, we see action. So now the person has to leave his home, drive to the Kingdom Hall. The elders have to come to the Kingdom Hall, and they will meet with the person. And after this, they will render a judgment as of whether they think this person should be disfellowshipped or not. And if the person's decision is to disfellowship, the person then is given 7 days to appeal his case. He says, well, I think y'all brothers are wrong. I want to appeal my case. And therefore, to get the circuit overseer involved. And the circuit overseer is now going to put together a appeals committee, which will be elders from another congregation. So now everybody knows, everybody's getting to your business at this point. So now we're going to get another group of individuals that's going to come in. Now keep in mind, all of this is action, active things going on. And so this is why I tell people the basic difference between disfellowshipping and a disassociation is one is passive and one is active. Now, why is that important? Well, that was actually a question I want to know. Why is it important? What's the difference? Well, it turns out that the real difference and the real reason why the society has two types of punishments that a person can be rendered as being received is because one deals with legality. That's right. They're legal aspects. Bible has nothing to do with this. This is strictly legal stuff. You see, Jehovah's Witnesses operate in over 200 countries around the world. And so in various countries, governments view anything from the United States, religion, business, they don't care what it is. If it's coming out of the United States of America, in some countries, they think you work for the CIA, and that's all they know, and they don't really care. And so what an American corporation like the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society can be viewed as in many countries, is this is just a CIA operative. And so they don't trust religion. And like I said, they don't trust things that come out of the United States in general in many countries around the world. So because of all these different laws in different places, the society had to come up with something. And I asked this question once to someone. I said, basically, disassociation is the brainchild of the legal department and the service department. Basically, the society needed a way to get people out of the congregation and yet have Jehovah's Witnesses treat them exactly the same. So you have two different things, but you get the same result. This person's family is not going to talk to them anymore. Nobody who recognized them is going to acknowledge them anymore. So you get the same results, but legally, it's two different things. And here's why. The society says a person is disfellowshipped because they've committed a sin and they're unrepentant, right? It's interesting that some sins, according to the society, are classified as disfellowshipping offenses, whereas other sins are classified as a disassociating type sin. Now, it's interesting when you look at the ones that typically fall under the disassociating category. These ones, the society can get in trouble with various governments around the world. Let me give an example. You see, if a person, for example, you have a 17, 18, 19-year-old young Jehovah's Witness man, young guy. He decides, I'm joining the army. I'm going to join the army. I'm going to get me an education, travel the world. Now, according to the Watchtower, this person is not going to be disfellowshipped. Oh, no. We're not going to disfellowship him. We're going to say he is disassociated. Another thing, for many, many years, if a person took blood, they would be brought in on charges of taking blood, and it will be handled as a disfellowshipping offense. A few years back, legal department suggested to the service department, we need to move this thing over. And so they moved it from a disfellowshipping offense over to a disassociating offense. And here's why. Because once again, it requires action on the part of a disfellowshipping. A disassociation is passive. And what that basically means is elders don't have to do anything. The elders won't have to call you. The elders won't have to have no meeting with you. They simply will say, based on your actions, you are disassociated. Now, that's kind of interesting because elders, when they go to elder school, they're taught the purpose of having a judicial meeting in the back of the Kingdom Hall is to see if you can snatch this lost sheep, snatch them out of the fire, you know, help them get back on the straight and narrow. That is what elders are told. One of the purposes of a judicial committee meeting is to help the person from their erring ways. All right. So as a shepherd, here's a lost sheep. So when you meet with a person in a judicial case, you're trying to determine, is the person repentant? Do they feel sorry? So forth and so on, right? So the question you have to ask is, since the shepherds are supposed to be trying to help the sheep that is lost, why is it then if a person decides, I'm going to sign up for the army, or if a person decides, I'm going to take blood, that there's no one who's going to meet with them to help bring them back, as it were? The reason why is because there's some legal issues. You see, in many countries, when a person is told that he cannot serve in his country's army, that's considered treason. And any American corporation that's involved in telling citizens that we're going to take action against you because you have decided to join the army, this raises red flags in many countries. Or you may have a person who is sick in the hospital. All the elders are there. The hospital liaison committee has people representing, so forth. So all these people from the Kingdom Hall are there. And this person, older person perhaps, is laying there sick, can't think, move, you know, real woozy, you know, so forth. And so this person is being told, now, if you take that blood, then you know we're going to have to meet with you when you get out of the hospital. Now, if you have non-Jehovah's Witness family members, and they're sitting there thinking to themselves, y'all threatening my mama that y'all going to do something to her if she takes this blood. And so now you're looking at some serious legal issues for the society. So they decide, the society just made a conscious decision with the help of the legal department, we got to back up off this. This is not the way to go. And so it's more of a legal issue as opposed to a scriptural reason as to why there is a difference between disassociation and disfellowshipping. The two, one is active, one is passive. So basically the society can legally say, we did not try to influence the person to change his mind. We didn't have anything to do with it. In fact, we didn't even meet with them with no judicial committee case or nothing. And so this is basically why the society has disassociation. It is for the purpose of legally protecting them so they don't get sued.
Thank you for tuning in to The Critical Thought. And be on the lookout for our next video where JT will be talking about whether or not you should fade or disassociate after discovering this is not the truth. This has been Lady C.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.